Translation. In gladness, the coward men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's bodies with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's body. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. From this statement, we can understand that 5,000 years ago, not only was there enough milk, butter and curd to eat, drink and cook with, but when there was a festival, it would be thrown about without restriction. There was no limit to how extensively milk, butter, curd and other such products were used in human society. Everyone had an ample stock of milk, and by using it in many varied milk preparations, people would keep good health in natural ways and thus enjoy life in Krishna consciousness. In response, please. In gladness, the coward men enjoyed the great festival. We've done this wrong. Okay, we can just... Omiganti mirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati svabhadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. They've turned the local pally into a bowling alley. Things ain't what they used to be. Has anybody heard that before? No, this was a song in the, I think it must have been 1940s or 50s, and it went on how things are changing, and then they changed the bowling alley into nightclubs. Yeah, that was the next. Then they changed it, what, the nightclubs into Tesco's. And what will it be next? Can anybody guess? Yeah, so things are always changing. Things are always changing. So we see, you know, 5,000 years ago, you know, an ordinary person reading that, he wouldn't be able to understand really how people got pleasure from such simple things. And I remember when I started reading Bhagavad Gita, he talked about the pleasure in the different modes, happiness in the modes, and mode of ignorance. That resonated with me a little bit. And then the mode of passion definitely resonated. And then when I read about the mode of goodness, I thought, how can anybody enjoy in the mode of goodness? There's nothing happening. So I was definitely well seated in the mode of passion and ignorance. So it takes culture. We don't actually have any culture nowadays. It's just, you know, a complete mess. But, you know, the modern day culture is, just creating more and more disturbance in society. But when we look back at this particular situation, we can understand that, you know, the Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and all the Vedic literatures, they're backed up by all the authorities. So we can understand that these people are wise, they're advanced in spiritual understanding. So these are actually applications or activities which can make us happy. So it needs a culture to re-establish this situation. So we read, what's that verse? Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prem. No. Namo Brahmanya Divayago. Jagaditaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So it's saying that we should protect the Brahmins and the cows. So the first thing, the cows, when we think about the cows, what do they provide for society? If we centre our life around the cow protection and live a rural life in that way, then we don't need anything. Can anybody think of anything we need? Basics, if we have the cow. We've got fuel. You know, fuel is one of the biggest things in society. Without fire, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, there's nothing actually working. So we've got fuel. We've got medicine. We've got antiseptic. Even in India, they put the cow dung inside the house and they don't have any problem with bacteria or flies or anything. Anything else? Fertilizer. What more could you want? You know, everybody lives on the field. But modern civilization, Prabhupada says, think they're separate. We're in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada is explaining how, you know, even for the production of the factories, he says that we need the field to provide those things. And it talks about all living entities subsist on grains. Grains are born from rains. Rains are born from yajna, and yajna is born from prescribed duties. And so this is the verse which beats modern civilization. Is it right? How does it beat modern civilization, this verse? Because everybody has to eat. They're producing so many things in the factory. But Prabhupada says, can they eat their tyres? Can they eat the nuts and bolts? They can't do anything. As soon as there's a little bit of rain, as soon as there's no rain, everybody's struggling like anything. I remember in New Vrindavan, one devotee was giving a class here about, they were invited to a radio program. And on that radio program, actually there'd been a drought for about 3 months. And so, you know, that's a rural part of the USA. And so everybody was like, you know, expecting that there would be no crops. we're going to suffer. And so at that time, halfway through the drought, or towards the end of the drought, they invited the leader of New Vrindavan and some of the devotees, and they were giving, there was an interview, and the interviewer at one point, he said, can you, I hear that you can, you know, you have mystic powers, can you make it rain? And the leader said, yes, we can make it rain. And everybody went, oh no. They're expecting, he's blown it now, now we have to try, you know, if we don't make it rain, then we look like fools. And so he says, get the kartals out, get the madanga out. And so they were performing this kirtan for about an hour and nothing happened. And so everybody were really disappointed. And then all of a sudden, ring, 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 ring. There was a call from the meteorological office and to the radio station. They said, there's dark clouds forming on the horizon. And half an hour later, it just threw it down the rest of the day. It just rained and rained and rained. So yeah, you know, without these natural things, without rain, without sunlight, sunlight gives fire, the cow is helping us to you know, use all those things very nicely. I was walking in the field the other day, one evening, and I was walking, I took the shortcut across the aerodrome and was walking back to the temple, and I noticed all the ground, it's, you know, we've had plenty of rain, but it's all cracked, there's cracks about this wide. And same as Mataji was saying yesterday, you know, if we don't use proper fertilizer, if we don't use the cow, then the land will turn into a desert. It's already starting to happen. One other thing I noticed is that I set off from the aerodrome and I'd only walked about 100 yards. And then this big tractor came out, you know, with those really big wheels. And it came from the farm, it came up. In a few seconds it was there. And then it got this big trailer at the back. And then, you know, I was watching, I was amazed. It started driving towards these stacks of hay. They're a particular size and a particular length and a particular width. They're all exactly the same and they dotted about the field. And then all of a sudden he got to this, he was driving pretty fast, about 20 miles an hour. And then he got to this particular haystack and all of a sudden from out of the side of this, like a combined harvester, I suppose you'd call it. No, it was just like a truck. You know, you could attach it to the back of an articulated lorry. This conveyor came out, and then it just drove a little bit slower, and then it conveyed this piece of this haystack, not a big haystack, but this compressed hay, and then it got onto the fully onto the conveyor. Then it turned around at 90 degrees, and then it put it onto the truck. I thought, wow, that's really amazing, and then. I saw, you know, I was just glued to the spot watching this. And then he drove to the next one and he put the next one on. And then not only that, then the bottom lifted up and lifted them both completely vertical and pushed it against this back piece, which were like spring loaded. And he went all around the field and he was pushing these on, and he was shoving it back. And that's all he had to do. One person within, it must have been less than 5 minutes, he cleared the field. So we're really advancing, aren't we? You know, and I was thinking actually that would take probably a dozen men a week to do. So why do they do that? Oh, that's it. They take them all into their cities so they can do more important work, so they can, you know, make these nuts and bolts, make so many things where the, you know, the leaders can make plenty of money. And I used to be in a situation like that. It used to be electrical engineering. And they were constantly trying to, you know, make things more automated. And I said one day, why are we trying to automate so many things? What's the profit? And everybody looked at me as if I'd got two heads. You know, what's the matter with him? So we can have more time to enjoy. So, you know, we have plenty of leisure time. The machines can do it. And so that's what happens, is that, you know, when at some point everybody they've brought into the city, then because there's a, you know, there's competition, they have to do away with the manpower and they make that automated and nobody's got a job. And then we've got surplus population, aren't we? And they have to do something with this surplus population. So they increase the drinking hours to keep them occupied because, they, you know, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. And then that only lasts for so long until, you know, until the effects of the booze wears off. And then they've got to find them something else to do. This is one of the situations we've got now. And then what do? They start creating all this artificial food. And when you analyse it, it's just slowly killing people. I heard one devotee say, the leaders have realised that there's too much population now. And that, it seems to be that way, that, you know, we're eating all the wrong things. Why? It's already there. And then there's all these pharmaceuticals to put us right when this type of food makes us ill. And then the pharmaceuticals are also owned by the same people. And so, you know, they make a profit out of, you know, making us ill, and then they make a profit out of killing us eventually. So gradually they're just killing society. We're just like on a treadmill. We just be when we're no longer useful, then they just get rid of us. And so this is completely opposite of Vedic civilization, because in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, if I kill my elders, then what will happen? There'll be nobody to keep religious principles. Well, so then religious principles and there's another word. There's nobody to keep society in the mode of goodness, religious principles and things which are brought forward from the last generation, you know. And so I had an experience of that when I was working. And all these things we've done in the past, when we come to Krishna consciousness, they start to make sense. I was thinking we had one particular machine, and it was a very old contactor which put electricity onto it to make it work. And one day it broke down. It very rarely broke down because it was, it was from the old style. And, the people who built it and installed it and maintained it, they'd all, more or less, there were only one old electrician left. And nobody knew how to set this thing up, because the older generation had gone. And so then they remembered, there's this old electrician he was about when they went to introduce this machine. So they went to him and he came up and he got this little piece of steel plate, and it was purposely made by the manufacturers of this particular contactor, and he got little chunks out here and little V pieces, and he started going through the contactor, putting this piece in everywhere, and he set it all up, and it was running like a song. So if he hadn't been there, they would have been struggling. They probably have to spend thousands of pounds to get a new thing in it, reinstall it. So why are we saying this is that, even in modern society, we need the experience of the older generation, and especially to keep, Dharma going. Dharma is, the thing that's keeping society sane is Dharma. So Arjuna was actually correct by ordinary standards, but, when Krishna was giving him a direct order on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, then that's actually the highest dharma. So Arjuna eventually followed Krishna's direction. But we see the absolute necessity for, Prabhupada says, our disease is we're always changing things. Is that right? Even in temples, there's one temple in England, they change the temple president and they change the Brahmachari ashram. They put, it was one long room. So I thought, so they made it into individual rooms. So they'd have more privacy. And then the next leader came in and he took all the walls out and it's a long room again. And then lo and behold, another leader came in and he put all rooms in again. This has been in the space of about 10 years. It's ridiculous. I've been to other temples where, there's a sledgehammer in the corner of the room. That's ready for knocking the next wall out. You can't leave things alone. And then, you make a change, and then within 6 months you find out, well, we really needed that, There's also a song about that. Has anybody heard that one? Right Said Fred. Yeah? That there wall is going to have to go. Where are we now? So that's two ways that society gradually degenerates, that we don't keep the wisdom which is coming from the elders, and society, we think this society is not following the proper Vedic etiquette, but in Borneo, do you know Borneo? In Borneo, they're headhunters and cannibals. They have all kinds of different living entities there. What they do with the elders in Borneo, I was watching one television program before I joined the movement, and when the elders get to, when he looks a little bit, he looks a little bit dodgy, you know, he's like getting a little bit unsteady on his feet, dying, they put him in the pot, and they eat him. So we ain't got that far yet, but we're not far off. So we've got a lot of work to do. So yeah, if we keep things wholesome, Om Purnam Adapurnam Idam, Purnat Purnam Udachite, Purnasha Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishite. So, you know, right in the beginning of the Ishupanishads, it's telling us that, you know, everything's already complete. We don't have to fiddle about with anything. You know, Krishna's complete. Everything he does is complete. Whatever emanates from him is complete. And even though, you know, he still remains complete, even though he's given so much. And so this material world, it's like a microcosm or a macrocosm. It's actually all complete. And everything works according to a certain law. This body is also, you know, a living being, which a living entity, which is complete. And when everything is used according to the direction of the complete whole, then everything works completely nicely. And so, you know, one little diversion makes the whole thing a mess. Prabhupada said, you know, there's so many zeros in this world. But unless we put Krishna in the front, it amounts to nothing. So when we take Krishna out of any equation, then there's going to be some difficulty, no matter how many adjustments we make. So we should understand that Ishupanishads is definitely directly on the ball. The next verse says that, therefore, we should understand everything as its utility and how it should be used. And this is exactly what we're not doing nowadays. So we see 5,000 years ago that, you know, they had plenty of everything. Plenty of milk, butter, cheese. and so there was no wantage in society. Even health. These things, if they're taken in sufficient and correct quantities, then we don't need to have so many herbal medicines. But what's happening is that is that when we... I went in the kitchen yesterday, first time in about, you know, a year, and... anyway, I've no need to speak about that, but... there's different kinds of milk. Has anybody noticed that? Probably not. There's different kinds of milk. And... one comes out of a plastic container or a box, and one comes out of the churn, at least from, you know, immediately. So the one that comes out of the churn is from our own cows, and one that comes out of the box is from, you know, from outside. And I used to be a little bit bewildered about, you know, why some milk went off and some didn't, because sometimes from the night before there'd be a little bit of milk left over in the cup, and I'd look at it and it had gone off. I thought, oh, it's turned into yogurt. And then sometimes when I got some milk, I'd look at it and it's not gone off. It's completely, you know, you just add some more hot water to it and you can drink it. Taste is a little bit different. And then I realized that one devotee was telling me, one of his disciples is a... like a scientist in New Zealand, he researches into foods, and he says what they do with the milk is that they dehomogenize it. It's not homogenized to start with, but they break it down and they separate it into curds and whey. You've heard of that, haven't you? Curds and whey. And they take the whey out and they dry it and they make it. Have anybody heard of whey powder? They sell it in these health food stores, and it's supposed to give you a lot of, you know, people are buying it, you know, it's like so expensive. You get a little tin, it's probably about 10 quid for some whey powder, and you add that to your food, and, you know, you really develop some good muscles. And then, but what they do with the, when they took the whey out of it, they homogenize it. I don't know what they do, but they reconstitute it, and it becomes a white liquid. It's like the milk without the whey in it, and the whey is the most important part. And then they sell that to the public for the same price. And so we are drinking what we think is milk, and we're supposed to have whey in there to give us energy, you know. And when you leave that for long, I leave it for one night, and it's still, you know, it's still milk, even though it's been in a warm situation. But ordinary milk goes off. But if you leave it for a week, it's like it turns into a piece of plastic. So, you know, we're drinking that. We're just lining his stomach and everything, and his arteries and everything. We're, you know, caught in a plastic. And then we wonder why, you know, there's so many diseases nowadays. So, talking about this. Oh, there was one other example. I was with another devotee, and he was reading the newspaper. He says, listen to this. And he says, in America, they've sentenced one person to 30 years imprisonment. For 30 years? That must be a really bad crime. What's he done? He said he was trying to sell natural milk. He was trying to sell natural milk. And his own vegetables he'd grown in the garden. So why would they sentence him for 30 years? It doesn't make sense, does it? But it does make sense. If you were a materialist and you were making so much money on all these artificial things, and then somebody starts, you know, tapping people on the shoulder saying, you know, you can live naturally, you don't have to go to the supermarket and buy all this. You can just grow it in your own garden. If people get that idea, then he's in trouble. So, you know, I'm just saying all this because, you know, most people don't realise what's happening. You go into the general public and they just have no clue. They're just caught up in that we've got so many things now that we didn't used to have. And, you know, but we have to work so hard for these things. You know, when people advertise a job, it's for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, a few hundred pounds. But in reality, when they go to that job, you have to work 10, 11, 12 hours every day. I was in Scotland. It is related to this verse because what we're talking about is how society is trying to find enjoyment, which is so complicated compared to this simple enjoyment these coward men are experiencing. Because when their mind gets complicated, it needs complicated ways to satisfy the mind. It becomes more and more complicated. One Harinam, Rath Yatra, when we used to go to Battersea Park. In the beginning, we went to Trafalgar Square up to maybe the 1990, something like that. Then we started going to Battersea Park. And then probably 10 years ago, we started going to Trafalgar Square again. But this was when we were going to Battersea Park and we were going over the bridge. And then all of a sudden, this guy, he jumped off this really high crane and he was going headlong down. And all of a sudden, this piece of elastic tied to his feet, you know, saved him from, you know, splashing himself against the concrete floor. And he was finding some pleasure from doing that. This bungee diving. And then he come back up again, and down again. So, you know, we don't have to go to that length. There's easier ways to define happiness. The senses become so used to more and more sense gratification that you go to that extreme. I was talking about when I went to Scotland, and the one devotee there, he'd been doing Food for Life, and he decided that it'd be good to get a job and get some money together, you know, work for a few months or maybe a year. And so he got this job with, I don't need to mention the firm, but it's one of these, you know, warehouse delivery firms. You can go on the internet and pick up whatever you want and deliver it. And I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. And they set him on and he had to deliver 60 parcels in a day for the first week. And he was delivering these parcels, working fairly, you know, he wasn't really messing about. And then they upped it to 80 parcels. And so he carried on, he did 80 parcels. And then they upped it to 120 parcels. And he says, wait a minute. He says, I'm working 12 hours a day to deliver these 80. He says, I can't do that. And he said, so he had to pack his job in. This is the exploitation which is going off. So what's the point here is that, you know, people are working so hard for these extra enjoyment, this car. Everybody's got a car. 75% of the population, or 50%. We're having to work so hard to keep these things. Man and wife working like anything. So, you know, human civilization has become completely dysfunctional. And so we see that this is a natural way to live. All happiness is there when we come to the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, you know, we don't need so much to satisfy us. So this movement is really the next, well, actually the most immediate thing we have to try to implement is what Prabhupada told us that nearly 40 years ago, you know, he was living on the farm in New Brindavan. Was it New Brindavan or Pennsylvania? You know, he was taking the grains that they'd just freshly harvested, grinded, making bread. He was drinking the milk from the cow. He was going into nature to do his calls of nature. And he lived like that just to show that this is where, the way we should live. We don't have to have all these mod cons. And so this is our test, that we can start to become more and more detached from society. Because this society, eventually it'll all fall apart. So what's the thing we have to do? What would you say one step towards that? Anybody got any ideas how we can start to build that bridge towards self-sufficiency? Yeah, if you've got any garden, definitely start growing your own vegetables. Anything else? I mean, I'm a novice at this. I just think that it just seemed common sense that we start getting land. You know, lands. You know, in the bank now, you got if you're. I read on the internet yesterday. I was looking at the effects of Brexit. I was seeing how it's affecting the country, and already HSBC is it. They've already started charging people for drawing the money out of the bank. Can you believe it? You know, when I first started working, you used to put some money in the bank and they used to give you interest because they used to use that money and they used to, you know, invest it, make some money and then give you a share of the interest. And then, you know, a few years ago, the bank got too greedy and they completely blew it. So all the general population have to pay for their mistake, so you don't get any interest now. But now they're going a stage further, that you put the money in the bank and we'll charge you. You try and get it out and you can't get it out. If you don't have, you know what I mean? Do you know that? Are they the next ones? I thought it was HSBC. Anyway, so definitely, if we've got any assets, maybe we should buy some land, if we can afford it, that is, and start growing. Because land always keeps its value, don't it? It goes up and down, it fluctuates, but it always comes back to the norm, because we live off the land. You know, we can grow things on the land. We can build on the land. It's such an asset. And then we can start to live naturally. And then we can start to appreciate these activities of the cowherd men here in Vrindavan. How they are enjoying life just by, you know, using the natural things that the land produces. Just by living with the nature. The mode of goodness. By practicing the mode of goodness, we become situated in the mode of goodness, And the mode of goodness becomes a normal way to live. By practicing the mode of passion, we become situated in the mode of passion and we're never satisfied. So at some point there has to be that little bit of a change, that pain in change. And that's one way we can probably begin. Anyway, it's nearly 5:30 now. So we can stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments?